Show.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. Man, I think we're talking about some pretty tired old preamps here. I hope I'm not blowing anybody's speakers out. Anyway, here we go. It is a brand new week. It is the second full week of March 2015. Daylight savings time has begun, reminding us of the words of the wise old indigenous American who said, "Only a white man would think that by cutting the bottom off a blanket and sewing it to the top of the blanket, would you wind up with more blanket?" Yeah, basically, everybody's sleep schedules have been thrown off, but hey, we're saving daylight. Not, please. Anyway, I think it's 6 minutes past the hour of 6 p.m. on this, the ninth day of March, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump in and enjoy the conversation inside one of the most merry and joyous little online real-time communities enjoying the program that there possibly can be. Good evening in the chat room to News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Gerald. I had the manifest pleasure of actually, I love it when I get to actually meet members of our Horn Family Commune congregation. And that was the case this past Saturday with Gerald. I got to meet Gerald West Virginia Workers Rally in Charleston. Got to talk, hang out a little bit. Anyway, I'm sorry, doing two or three things. I'm a multitasker. I got to meet Gerald, and we took in the rally together. Boss Man Wayne was there as well. Thank you very kindly to Randy and Jeremy, Loud and Clear on TuneIn on my Mac, iTunes on my Mac, Bob, and Loud and Clear on TuneIn, says Jeremy. Thank you both. Good evening to Jeremy in the chat room. Good evening, Labor Man, and good evening, Texas T. Third stage Guild Navigator Sparky, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator that he is folding space. He is also manifesting in the chat room as Man Cave. And it is the ninth day of March, 8 minutes past the hour, and hey, look. More and Monday. Who could imagine? We've got a wide variety of Morans to investigate and to expose this evening. No, not expose as in the dirty raincoat kind of way, but just, you know, cast a little of sunlight is the best disinfectant, right? Well, we'll be disinfecting some Morans this evening. A note about keeping the program on the air is always in order. There remains on the table the offer, the kind offer by News Ninja Carol Baker of a Hooterville Holler gift basket, including a lovely summer sausage, meat stick, cheese, and a gallon of fresh root beer from Mug Up out in Missouri. Wow, what, huh? I just saw a note from Carol in the chat room saying, "Am I the only one hearing nothing now?" At any rate, Carol has her premium offer there for anybody who wants to do a Have a Show on Me. And that offer is available till we get caught up, and there's a lot of catching up to do. And so Have a Show on Me is anybody who wants to take care of one evening's fundraising, which is $150. But that doesn't mean that's the only way to participate. There's no challenges on the table this evening, but we are badly in need of raising funds this evening. I'm sorry to do this, but, you know, there's nobody out there who's writing us a check to try to hustle you into buying gold now or a Bose Wave radio that you listen to while lying on your Swedish mattress, which will accept a bouncing bowling ball which has previously been picked up by an auric vacuum cleaner or whatever, as you lay there waiting for your hair to grow back in on your little noggin from your herbal hair growth remedy. Although, the stuff they advertise on right-wing radio, Jesus, God. But we do. We need to raise from last week. The trip to D.C. turned out to be a howling expense. And we need to raise, there's about $600 to be raised from last week. And, of course, we're trying to raise $150 this week. We've got looming monumental bills left over from the frozen, bitter February just passed. I talked about a little bit about that on Friday. But that having been said, you know, that's not the be all and end all here. No, this is Moran Monday. Anybody wanting to help out can go to headonradionetwork.com, where the PayPal interface is under the tab Contribute. There are some rather invasive questions there. You don't have to answer those. Like, you know, what's your employer's shoe size? That kind of thing. What kind of no, don't answer that. If you wish to participate by means of the United States Postal Service and the good old-fashioned handy-dandy check or money order, just remember that neither checks nor money orders should be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but it should instead be made payable to The Horn, and mail them to The Horn, see how it works, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia 25801. And yes, I know we need to get that up on the website. It's on the list. And thank you for reminding me. And so, that begs the question, where do we go this here Moran Monday? This being Moran Monday, well, I guess we can jump right into the Morans. We're going to jump right into the Morans. It's just that we've got a bunch of them. A real boatload, if you will. And I'm sorry, I'm getting some stuff set up. production-wise.
I think I tweeted just right after airtime on Friday that the broadcast week was barely even begun, or ended, rather, when we got our first more in. And that one looked like a pretty strong contender. And there was another Moran come Saturday, before I even hit the road to go down the mountain to go to the West Virginia Workers Rally. And that one looked pretty strong. By the way, thank you very kindly to Gerald for getting us started this evening. It is much appreciated. Hopefully folks will stand there shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, to help keep this all going. Thank you, Gerald. Thank you very kindly. But then something happened, more and Monday-wise. So let's get... let's get everything in order here. For instance, it starts like this.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
You know, it's talk like that that got Joni Ernst inadvertently elected senator from Iowa.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, indeed, we have Morans of all varieties right here in this tent, right behind me here, that you can hear me tapping with my cane. Yes, indeed, we have Morans, the likes of which you can scarcely imagine. Right-wing Morans, Birther Morans, Deather Morans, Ninther Morans, Tenther Morans, Booger-Eating Morans, Bircher Morans, Bagger Morans, Libertarian Morans, Republicans, Morans, one and all. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. For less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can enter the Moran Monday tent, this thin cybernetic veil of canvas back here, with a word of warning to those braving the entree to hang on to purses, pets, wallets, European man bags, children, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
No, like I said, I thought we had some real contender nominees. But then, oh Jesus, then... then the good stuff started showing up. Holy cow. I offer you, for your consideration... Jeremy noting that in my list of things you can buy from right-wing radio programs, I neglected to mention the great folks at Lumber Liquidators and their tainted, poisonous wood. Yeah, buy more right-wing crap. Yeah, I don't care if I won the lottery. I would not buy anything from Lumber Liquidators. Those dirty bastards have advertised for years on that Oxymorons program. Thank you for the reminder, Jeremy. We'll have to add them to the list. I quit drinking Snapple for years when those idiots started advertising with Flush Phlegm Ball. I started drinking it when they stopped. Yeah. No, this one just seemed like it... I mean, this has Past Master Moran written all over it. Necessarily, we have to go... the Florida stand for it. Yeah, yeah.
because, well, only in Florida, I guess. This is the downside. We were being regaled a little bit by our dear friend Guy James over the past week, being regaled with some tales of how warm and wonderful the Sunshine Coast is. Guy's on the Gulf side of, Florida. And understand, please. Oh, time out. Sorry, little stuff going on in the background. Okie doke. Anyway, no. So, bear in mind, this what we're about to talk about on this here Moran Monday doesn't come from the Onion. It doesn't come from any of the. It doesn't come from the Daily Current, which is the unfunniest website on the web, or any of those other fake news sites that don't do a very good job of making sure that people understand that the news they're offering is fake. I have this story via Reuters. I have this story by the via the Washington Post. I have it via the Houston Chronicle. I have it via U.S. News and World Report. Yahoo News has picked it up. Time Magazine has picked it up. The Guardian in Merry Oldie Engeland has picked it up. And this is Rick Scott, who was, I believe, an unindicted co-conspirator in what our buddy Andy tells me is now the second largest case of Medicaid fraud, if I've got that correct. Unindicted co-conspirator in the second largest case of Medicaid fraud in the country's history. So I'm pretty sure this is a real story. To wit, Barbara Liston, Dateline Orlando, Florida, writing for Reuters. Despite coastal Florida's vulnerability to storm surges and rising sea levels, which is very, very real, they're already experiencing it. You may recall our buddy Jay Cruzen has from time to time sent us pictures of the part of Florida where he lives and works, where the sea comes right into downtown Fort Lauderdale. Sometimes, kinda. Yeah. Sometimes not so kinda, it just does. And we might also recall that, very true, Stockton Larry pointing out in the chat room, Bob, I don't have to tell you morons in Florida have a home court advantage. Yes, yes. Anywho, despite coastal Florida's, this is from Reuters, vulnerability to storm surges and rising sea levels, the state's Department of Environmental Protection, and gosh, don't they sound almost as effective as West Virginia's Department of Environmental Protection, that is to say, not at all, Department of Environmental Permitting or pollution or what, huh? Yeah. In 2011, and this has only recently come to light, the governor, Rick Scott, of Florida, who looks an awfully lot like Skeletor, just does. Rick Scott commanded even, you know, if you're doing official correspondence, like, say, on a habeas corpus petition, or a writ, actually, did you know that the proper term of reference is His Excellency the Governor? Yeah, no kidding. Some of that outmoded anti-democratic stuff still rattles and bangs around inside our bureaucratic processes. His Excellency Rick Scott, the Governor of Florida, compelled the State Department of Environmental Protection in Florida never to use the phrases global warming or climate change in any official communications. The Florida Center for Investigative Reporting discovered this in the not-too-distant past. David Hastings is a marine science professor from Eckerd College in St. Petersburg on the west coast of Florida, the lovely, lovely west Gulf Coast of Florida with its sugar-white sand beaches. David Hastings said, "This is embarrassing, but worse than that, it's very worrying. To have this authoritarian word control is very Orwellian, a page right out of 1984. Now, meanwhile, the governor's office, through his Department of Press Flackery, said, and the Department of Environmental Protection in the state of Florida, there's no policy, and it simply is not true. Weasel words. There's no policy. Well, you know, policies are written, and they're official documents, and they go through comment periods and stuff like that. No, hell no, there's no policy. It's just that His Excellency, the governor, Rick Skeletor Scott of Florida, said, I don't want to hear nobody using the words climate change or global warming in any official documents coming out of the Department of Environmental Protection, because then I'll get a hateful phone call from my dear friends, Charles and David Koch. And I don't like to upset them, because the last time I did, I wound up with a horse's head in my bed. Yeah. John Tupps was the one who got all Orwellian and said, there's no policy, it is simply not true. Okay, show us all the memos that have climate change and global warming in them. Aha, see, there it is. Former employees of the department detailed the unwritten policy in interviews with the nonprofit news agency, yeah, the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting, whom I might tend to trust a little bit more than a for-profit news agency. Yep. Employees were told not to use the phrases climate change, global warming, sea level rise, or sustainability. Really? Sustainability's out too? Jesus. Yeah. This was confirmed by a lawyer named Christopher Byrd. He worked with the Department of Environmental Protection in Florida's Office of General Counsel. He said, nobody questioned it. There was just a lot of snickers and internal chuckling. Instead, they came up with some Orwell speak for the words that had been banned. Instead of saying sea level rise, they had to say coastal resiliency. I don't even know how those two are similar. In fact, they seem rather antonymic, don't they? Coastal resiliency. The sea level rose, but the coast was still there. 6 feet underwater. That's where the coast is. Yeah. And then, then there's the fact that a meeting was had with Rick Scott. There were five climate scientists who got to have a half-hour meeting with him in August of 2014, you know, just a few months ago, in which they warned him, you know, as scientists, to which I'm sure Rick Scott said, "Well, I'm not a scientist." We are. They warned him about the dangers posed in Florida by sea level rise, climate change, and coastal not nearly as resiliency as we would like it to be resilient. Right. Because, see, in that article a year or so ago, was it? Maybe more now? Called Goodbye Miami? There was a discussion of the fact that, if I recall correctly, some several millions of Floridians in South Florida are at a distinct risk of having their homes go underwater in the fairly near future as a result of sea level rise and climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And thus global warming, which would trigger the greatest evacuation and immigration crisis this country has ever known. Yeah. But nonetheless, Rick Scott didn't want anything to do with it. Now, okay, so that's the Reuters story. Then there's the Washington Post. Threatened by climate change, Florida reportedly bans term climate change. But before we forget, let's remember that this is nothing new. And if you look back at the time frame, well, it's almost contemporaneous with the same thing happening in, what was it, North Carolina Stan and Virginia Stan? The Old Dominion banning any talk of sea level rise there along the high-dollar property of the Virginia coast and the teabagger legislature and teabagger governor in North Carolina deciding to do the same regarding people who happen to live on that coastline. Yeah. The Washington Post describing it thusly: "It is one of the profound ironies of climate change that a state besieged by its effects, where coastal islands face existential threats and daily floods render major thoroughfares difficult to navigate." Did you notice that? Daily floods. If you go back, let's say you go to the library, they still have libraries, and let's say you go and you look for, say, the Miami Herald of 50 years ago, see if you can find any reference to daily floods back then. Or how about 75 years ago? Yeah, because that would be, what, 1940? See if you can find any references to daily floods then. I'm guessing maybe you don't. Yeah, that's true. Jeremy in Vermont pointing out, "Bob, that's just that science stuff and not the Word of God." And see, that's where it gets fun, because if climate change isn't real and if global warming isn't real, then, that must mean that the streets flood daily and 5 million people are at risk of being either drowned or displaced by the wrath of God. See, that's life in that demon-haunted world, and it gets kind of complicated. "It is one of the profound ironies of climate change that a state besieged by its effects, where coastal islands face existential threats and daily floods render major thoroughfares difficult to navigate, is also populated by powerful politicians who express deep suspicion of the relevant science," says the Washington Post. This is Florida, the state of Senator Marco Rubio, who said last year he doesn't, quote, "believe human activity is causing these dramatic changes to our climate." This is Florida, the state of former governor and Republican presidential contender Jeb Bush, who in 2009 called himself a global warming skeptic. And this is Florida, the state of Republican Governor Rick Scott, who has punted on the issue. "Well, I'm not a scientist," he told the Miami Herald's Mark Caputo last year when asked if he was becoming less skeptical of man-made climate change. You know, there's an old joke that Jerry Clower used to tell, noted Mississippi comic, and he worked the Bible and Cornpone circuit quite successfully. And the punchline, the joke was a conversation between God and Noah being a little bit skeptical about the need for ark building. And the punchline was God asking Noah, "How long can you tread water?" And all the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians in the audience. All right, Jerry Clower, I tell you what, he gets me every time, Marvelina. I think Jerry's the funniest man alive. And Jerry Clower was a funny, funny man. He truly was. Knock him out, John. Somebody up here's got to get some relief. That is a classic, an all-time classic. But that's where we are in Florida now. you kind of wish that the great big juvenile, the bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky would turn his reverb on periodically and ask people like Rick Scott and Marco Rubio, "How long can you tread water?" Yeah, right. Jeremy pointing out in Vermont that, you know, all that daily flooding and coastal erosion and coastal resiliency and whatnot. Yeah, that's because of the queers. Not all them shit we put into the air and the rainforest, which we burn, so effing McDonald's and Burger King, and yes, that right-winger Wendy can raise tainted meat to sell to Merca. Right. So it turns out, the article then notes, that, yes, apparently Rick Scott banned the use of climate change, and it's the same story. The Washington Post article, noting the Miami Herald article, said that the story was bolstered by the testimony of Christina Trotta, who used to work for the Florida DEP's Miami office. 2000 meeting that she couldn't, such as global warming, out to do anything. The administrator told us that we are the governor's agency. This is the message from the governor's office, and that is the message we betray. Thing that was not a true. Can we call time action of that? Those two words. Anybody here want to discuss false? You cannot discuss anything that's not a true fact, and change is an untrue fact. Sea level rise, untrue fact. Ability, untrue fact. How could, but, you know, and this is of what used to be, I wonder. Well, let's say Russian, the mad. But secondly, Dove, the Scott, we are the governor's, governor's agency. Belonging to, who was serfdom, I suppose, at the governor's office. So he's not a scientist, mind you, but he does have the ability as a non-scientist to tell scientists what words the scientists who are scientists are allowed to use. It wasn't really a surprise, because she knew that he was a climate change denier. But then also a surprise, given what a clear climate change data for it in general. Was the case with Reuters when the Wash reached out. No such policy. In this case, it was a different liar. In this case, Googled. The department constantly monitors changes we had to ecosystem and works with other local communities. You'll notice in that statement that the words climate change, neither climate change nor global warming appears. And then there's old John Tupps again. There's no policy in existence. Allegations and claims made in the Florida investigative article are not true. This policy propagated. Went down the drain when I washed my hair Saturday night. A report in the National Washington Post note said that South Florida is, quote, uniquely vulnerable to an imminent threat of increased inland flooding during heavy rain events in low-lying coastal areas such as southeast Florida, where just inches of sea level rise will impair the capacity of stormwater drainage systems to empty into the ocean. And that's some of the stuff that Jay Cruzan has told us about and shown us photos of. Meanwhile, as the Washington Post notes, Miami Beach, they got no choice. They can either try to hold back the tides, or they can stop being Miami Beach, and they can become an underwater theme park. University of Miami geologist Harold Wanless said to the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting, "You have to start real planning, and I've seen absolutely none of that from the current governor. It's beyond ludicrous to deny using the term climate change. It's criminal at this point." Oh, but it's only criminal if you're not taking a check from the Koch brothers. Now do you understand why my previous nominees took it on the chin for this? Yeah. And it really wouldn't. Woo! Okay, I'm just going to mention this headline and move on because I don't think I've got the emotional fortitude to go any further. Police: woman cut into 9-month-old baby's throat with power saw to stop her crying. Jesus. Let's just move along. Let's go to something crazy and stupid and funny for Moran Monday. Ouch! And yes, it ended poorly. Let's go over to crazy old uncle, former liquor supply officer, Marion Robertson. You might recall a couple of weeks ago that Marion was upset about people going to yoga class and sitting in the lotus position and humming Kalimar, Kalimar, right? Yeah. Well, he doesn't like the Buddhists either. And these all come from people who are either really, really stupid or really, really determined to punk old Pat. Let's go to the audio, shall we? And, yeah, Carol noting via message that the stream has been bouncing all over the place. I know. I wish I knew why. I can either just try to go forward or, you know, just sort of devolve and dissolve into a sea of tears. Yeah. But she also says that the stream has apparently stabilized. Hallelujah. Glory. So take it away, crazy old Uncle Pat. Crazy old Uncle Pat. Wait a minute. How does this happen? Technology.
Okay, Pat, this is Tina, who says, "I work in an environment where all of my coworkers are Buddhists. They talk about Buddhism all day long and try to preach to me."
Really? The goddess of irony lives. Because the first time I heard that, I thought, gee, that's kind of the polar opposite of most of America, where can you imagine some poor Buddhist having to work in a place where that's a Buddha? That's the god of China. Yeah, that was heard around here not too awfully long back. Buddha, that's the god of China. Mm-hmm. No telling yet who the god of Fiestaware is, or Melmac. No, Melmac. That's where the Coneheads came from. No, Remulac. Sorry. Such a busy, busy little mind. Can you imagine being some poor Buddhist who has to work around Christians all day? And then, you know, you need to accept the Lord Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. Where, I mean, outside of maybe the occasional Buddhist temple, Where is there in the United States where everybody's a Buddhist except for some lone Christian? Just asking.
Okay, Pat, this is Tina, who says, I work in an environment where all of my coworkers are Buddhists. They talk about Buddhism all day long and try to preach to me. It didn't matter much to me before, but since I recommitted myself to Jesus a year ago, it has started to bother me a lot. I remember our pastor telling us to teach others about Jesus so that they too can receive the salvation. However, every time I approach my coworkers, they end up offending me in ways that I feel are criticizing the Word of God. But if I argue, I end up offending them. What should I do? Should I continue to insist on helping them or get a different job? Also, it is not what I'm created to do, to minister to others.
Signed, Tina. They can't all be signed, Marveline. But Tina signed that. And I find that charming. She means well, Tina does. But buried in there is a nugget of a kernel, if you will, of truth. So what you find out is that she works among a bunch of people who happen to be Buddhist. And that she has, because her pastor has told her that Jesus wants people to be busybodies, that she has reached out and went a witnessing and told them heathen Buddhists that they're all going to hell without Jesus. Every time I approach my coworkers, they end up offending me in ways that I feel are criticizing the Word of God. Now, what might that be? Why don't you keep your little godling to yourself and we'll mind our own business? I'm a Buddhist. I'm not interested in joining your little Christian cult. Go away. They've offended the Word of God. Yeah. So the true story is probably that this woman has busybodied and has been told to F off.
But if I argue, I end up offending them. What should I do? Should I continue to insist on helping them or get a different job? Also, is this a sign that this is not what I'm created to do, to minister to others?
Look, if you are healthy and there's a mild contagion around you, the chances are you won't get it. But if you put yourself in the middle of a hospital ward where everybody has that disease except you, sooner or later you will be infected by it. Now, there's one thing for...
Now, hold on a damn minute. Did I get that right? You know, former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson is getting a little ambitious here in his old age. He's moved out of prayer meeting Wednesday and expanded into Moran Monday. Because I can't save that till Wednesday. We'll be up to our armpits in evangelical fundamentalists by Wednesday. But here you go. Pat Robertson, by analogy, just said that Buddhists are just like people infected by disease. You got that? Yes. The Pope of Protestantism just declared some several million Buddhists on this planet to be diseased human beings. Now, what do you do with disease? Well, you eradicate disease. You wipe it out. The goal is to eliminate disease from the face of the planet. See, this is how otherwise well-meaning Christians wind up starting holocausts. What time is it? 6:51. I'm not going to use the name. But it might be noted that in 1930s era Germany, Jews were referred to as vermin. What do vermin do? Vermin carry disease. And apparently, Buddhists are the disease themselves. You know, I'd love to see Marian Robertson look deeply into the eyes of His Holiness the Dalai Lama and tell him that he is diseased. Now, bless his heart, His Holiness the Dalai Lama would not get upside Pat's head with some sort of arcane martial arts roundhouse kick, no matter how badly we would like to see that happen. But let's do remember that, yes, this old coot said that, but when this old coot said that, there were several millions of Americans who were sitting in their rocking chairs at home going, "That's right, Pat, explain to them. And all the, they're going to hell and they're going to suffer in the lake of fire with the devil and all of his angels because God is love."
Hospital ward where everybody has that disease except you, sooner or later you will be infected by it. Now, there's one thing for...
Next thing you know, you'll be making intricate geometric designs out of sand on the floor and spinning tinkling bells and reading sutras and things like that. And you might wind up going to a consignment shop and buying a demon-infested Angora sweater, Tina. How do you look in a sweater, Tina? You wear sweaters, Tina? Do you? Back when I was the liquor supply officer, that would have meant something to a fella.
Or you to be ministering to somebody who's of a different persuasion. But if you're in the middle of hundreds and hundreds of people who believe that way...
You notice that now they've become hundreds and hundreds of people who believe that way? When all that Tina said is that everybody she works with is a Buddhist but her? Mm-hmm. Yes, Gerald noting, "Excuse me, sir, but do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ?" No, get back to work. Oh, my God. This is Christianity. Marty noting, "You know, we need the angry Indian here. As we've always said before, Moran Monday, a bumper crop." Oh, we're going to be busy. We're going to be plenty busy. Sooner or later, if you don't get out of there, you're going to be a Buddhist too. But what happened to once saved, always saved? Pat? I mean, you're a proponent of that doctrine, are you not?
Now, there's one thing for you to be ministering to somebody who's of a different persuasion, but if you're in the middle of hundreds and hundreds of people who...
Now, wait a minute. Tina apparently has a faith. Buddhists, however, being diseased people, they just have a persuasion, right?
Believe that way. You've got an uphill fight, and I think your best thing at that point is to withdraw with dignity. Get out of that environment, because they're going to get to you before you get to them.
Pat, she watches your show. Any dignity she had is, well, we're closing the barn door after the horses. Three counties gone, Pat. I mean, I know you sell muscle milk powder and Sea of Galilee mud mask and stuff like that, and prayer hankies and whatnot. Not a lot of dignity available over there to the 700 Club. No, not at all. This is only the beginning. But do let's... I don't know if our buddy Steve in New York City is listening. Hi, Steve. If you are, this is a special duct tape warning. This is a special duct tape and hockey puck warning. Let's get the warning bell out. Warning, warning, warning. This is a special duct tape and tennis ball warning to Steve and other of our LGBT brothers and sisters in the horn community. No, really. Get running. Get the duct tape. Get the hockey puck. Yeah. Apparently, News Talk Breakfast is a radio program in Ireland. News Talk Breakfast invited the Bishop of Elphin. No, really, there's such a place. We must stop now and offer up great praises to the goddess of irony. For yea, verily, she has this evening proven her deep and abiding and really, really humorous love for us all. Let me check something here. No, that's not it. Got to get this right. Yes. Elfin Bishop Kevin Doran. Elfin Bishop. I must have been through about a million girls. I love them and I leave them alone. I didn't care. Elfin Bishop. Now you know why we had to do that. Elfin Bishop Kevin Doran told News Talk Breakfast radio program that the upcoming referendum in Ireland to legalize same-sex marriage should be rejected by the voters. Now, Elfin Bishop, Kevin Doran, fooled around and fell. See, not only do you get Elfin Bishop Kevin Doran, but the greatest hit ever produced by Elfin Bishop was a song called Fooled Around and Fell in Love. Elfin Bishop Kevin Doran, I didn't care how much they cried, no, their tears left me cold as a stone. Elfin Bishop Kevin Doran. God, that's good. Oh, goddess of irony, I'm going to sacrifice a rubber chicken to you at midnight tonight. Oh, I am. He's evolved, he has, in his opinion, his very majestic prince of the church opinion of gay people. He's decided that in being gay, they're not being sinners per se. Don't all the gay members, the LGBTQ members of the Horn Family Commune congregation just feel so much better now that Elfin Bishop Kevin Doran says you're not sinners for being the way God made you, if there is in fact a God. There is a goddess, and she never takes the day off. No, it's not a sin to be gay, but it is a sin if you behave like you're gay. I mean, you're out there, you can't pass by the old vinyl record store without going in and seeing if they got any Liza Minnelli records, or maybe one of those Barbara Streisand albums from when she had the perm that was like 3 feet out from her head and shit. Yeah, you can't be running around acting homosexual. I mean, you can't get all teary-eyed just because Turner Classic Movies runs The Wizard of Oz in a 24-hour marathon loop. Don't be behaving all homosexual, damn it. Where is Peter Gottbold when I need him? Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran. Was he the vocalist? Because Elvin, no, that because the guy who sings that song, "Fooled Around, Fell in Love," he went on to be the lead male vocal alongside Grace Slick of Jefferson Starship. Yeah. Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran said, "What the church asks of people who are homosexual by orientation is exactly the same as what the church asks of people who are heterosexual." Okay, that'll be the last time I sing tonight, I promise. Fundraising just went straight to hell. What the church asks of people who are homosexual by orientation is exactly the same as what the church asks of people who are heterosexual, that they reserve sexual relationships to marriage. Now, it's a completely different question to say that we believe marriage is between a man and a woman. So you see how this works? You're not supposed to behave all gay and stuff, which would include marrying somebody else who was gay. But we don't want you to get married, so that we're just protecting the Roman Catholic Church in Ireland, in particular, Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran, is just protecting gay people from themselves. And then this. The reason this story doesn't make it to Wednesday and is instead reserved for More on Monday, again, it doesn't have the shelf life. There will be something equally stupid by Wednesday. But it also works in tandem with former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson's comment that people who are Buddhist are diseased by their Buddhism. Yes. God is love, isn't he? Isn't God just love? Because while former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson says that Buddhists are diseased, well, Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran and you got to wonder if Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran has ever actually fooled around and fell in love. Yeah. Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran, having said that, you know, what we're going to do is the best way to keep homosexuals from behaving all gay like is to keep them from getting married, because we want you to keep your sexuality inside marriage, just like the church teaches. But then you can't get married, so that way you can't be all having all sexy time, and therefore you won't be acting all gay, because that's what God wants. No, that wasn't bad enough. He doubled down, because the host of News Talk Breakfast then asked Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran, aren't people just born gay? You'll notice I'm not doing my bad Irish accent here. I'm proud of myself. To which question, namely, aren't gay people born that way? Isn't that as God intended? Which is actually a pretty convincing theological argument, because if you and this is all in the dance, angels dancing on the head of a pin department. Because if it's not as God intended, that means that demons, which probably means, at least under the tenets of some former manifestations of doctrine, dogma, and theology of the Roman Catholic Church, that these people, you know, gay people need to be burned to death at the stake. But what about ISIS? Headloppers! Well, no. Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran was not taking the bait. Nope. He said, that would be to suggest that some people are born with Down syndrome or spina bifida, that was what God intended. The thing about it is, I can't see it in the mind of God. Oh, I did the bad Irish accent! Damn it! I'm sure that Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran sometimes walks through the gayer areas of, say, perhaps Dublin, at which point, by the time he's gone through in his fancy House of Whoville hat and his lovely dress and his exquisite immaculate shoes, he winds up looking over his shoulder and saying, "They're always after me, Lucky Charms." I think I've been possessed by the goddess of irony. So, according to Elvin Bishop, Kevin Doran, being gay is just like having a debilitating, life-changing birth defect. Well, I guess that's a step up from being hopelessly diseased. But the host of morning breakfast talk news talk breakfast, whatever, was having none of it either. And he said, "The things you mentioned are disabilities. Your sexual orientation is not a disability." To which Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran said, "Well, I'm not entering it." "Well, I'm not entering into that," said Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran. "I'm just saying it would be wrong to suggest that everything that happens, happens because God intended it." Excuse me, Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran? I thought that was the whole point of this, that everything happens because God intends it? Oh, maybe that's my Calvinist upbringing, trying to sneak out of the recovery room. I mean, I thought they're all anti-abortion and everything. I thought and I knew you when you was in the womb, right? Yeah, I'm just saying it would be wrong to suggest that everything that happens, happens because God intended it. If that were the case, we'd be talking about a very different kind of God. How different? I mean, your holy book is full of... I mean, God murders some little boys because they laughed at how bald one of his prophets was. God intended it, they died. Balaam's ass talked. God intended it, the ass talked. Getting kind of hard to be difficult. I should probably say difficult. It's getting kind of difficult to keep up with the twists and turns of Christian theology now, isn't it? People who have children are not necessarily parents. Huh? Well, I guess we could certainly say that about representing what's his name from Arkansas. Who, along with his wife, adopted two precious little girls and then rehomed them. I think we discussed that this past Friday. They rehomed them to a guy who then raped the 6-year-old. You see, redefining marriage as between two men or two women or whatever redefines parenthood, according to Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran. Yeah, because I don't think I could take it if there was an Elvin Bishop joke and a Duran Duran joke in the same story about a homophobic, bigoted bishop. People who have children are not necessarily parents. They may be recognized in law as their parent, but the whole relationship between life-giving and parenthood is being separated. Thus saith Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran. Oh, how nice. Thank you, News Ninja Carol Baker. Update on the rehoming kids like puppies. The reporter who broke the story has now been threatened by a libertarian lawmaker. You know, because... freedom! Not to mention... Wolverines! Oh, dear God. Like I said, busy evening. Note coming in from Steve in China. He too notes having a lot of trouble with the stream this morning, but had to chime in on the Buddhist commentary. First, near as I can tell here in China, Buddhism isn't considered a religion. It's more like a system of psychological maintenance, a sort of prescription for keeping to your own affairs and not becoming too religious about your beliefs and convictions. You know, life is a passing illusion of false attachments. It's a veil of pain and tears, et cetera, yada, yada. I don't know how many Chinese I've talked to here over the past several years who are Buddhists, but I'll be damned if I've ever really met anyone who has any clear-cut ideas as to what being a Buddhist actually means or entails. I suppose some folks who believe in angry gods of brimstone and retribution need always to have someone to pick on, but the Buddhists are the last ones taking any of the nonsense seriously, even their own nonsense, even the ones inhabiting the temples, regards Steve in China. And that's always been my understanding of Buddhism as well, because, you know, there aren't just a hell of a lot of religions out there that have watchwords like kill the Buddha. I mean, can you imagine some committed Christian saying, kill the Jesus? Well, no, because they already did. And then you get into trouble when you find it. Right. Ay, ay, ay. No, and of all, the way I was taught in school, of all the great world religions, Buddhism probably manifests as almost the most purely existential. The Buddha is not going to get mad at you. In fact, I I've referenced it on the program, and I referenced it at the time that it happened. I remember when the jackassed society thugs from the Taliban blew up the Buddha statues at Bamiyan in Afghanistan, which were exquisite carvings, you know, 1,200 years old, that kind of thing. Huge things hewn out of the living rock. And the Taliban had access to some dynamite, and they started blasting. Kind of the way that the headloppers from ISIS are now going around trying to destroy the world's cultural heritage in places like Mosul and Nineveh and places where cherished 5,000-year, 7,000-year-old treasures of our earliest days of sedentary agricultural we call that civilization, which is kind of spitting in the eye of all the hunter-gatherers who were so successful for the previous 95,000 years. But I remember how furious I got. I was like, you know, we really probably should line those fuckers up against a wall and just start shooting. I try to remain nonviolent. I try to be peaceful. I try to be anti-war. But, man, when you're out there getting mad at statues, really? But then again, remember the good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Roman Catholic followers of Bill Donahue threatened the life of a guy who made a sculpture of Jesus, a chocolate Jesus, with chocolate Jesus bits that weren't covered up by a chocolate Jesus loincloth. Well, yeah. But anyway, I remember being upset about that. And I'm upset about it from a very Western standpoint. Cultural, you know. Humanity is culture, culture is humanity, that kind of thing. Cultural materialism. But guess what? Of all the people who would be least likely to be really bummed out about that, Buddhists. God, you know, it's a veil of suffering here, lots of tears. Lots of misery. Look over there. Behold the Taliban blowing up the statues. You know, they're going to kill the Buddha. He said it. We didn't. Yeah. So I'm in complete agreement with Steve in China. As regards Elvin Bishop Kevin Doran, Jack in Shreveport writes, wouldn't his comments include heterosexuals marching in a gay parade, etc., too? Yeah, because that's kind of acting all homosexual, because... I mean, if you're a supporter and an ally of the gay community, well, how are they supposed to know that you go home and have the good hetero sex? Because sometimes God does things that God doesn't intend. Doesn't that kind of make God sort of a klutz? You know, walking, you know, that kind of renders God into a sort of a George W. Bush character standing in China, tugging on the door, trying to get off stage and exit stage right, and that ain't a doorknob, George. You remember the video, right? Jack also pointing out, Bob, couldn't saying to someone that they will be tortured for an infinite period of time, burn in hell forever, if they didn't take on, say, beliefs A, B, and C, Couldn't that be taken as an indirect physical threat legally, especially if said to a sufficiently ignorant person and especially in the workplace? I'm pushing this to ridiculous levels, Jack says, but I wanted to see what you say from a lead. Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio. Now, I mean, obviously, I think most states and laws or commonwealths or whatever, if you walked up to somebody and started poking them in the chest and said, now, see here, you've got to accept Jesus. Well, that's a battery. That's an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. And then there's the woman in, what was it, Idaho, who beat the snot out of a woman until she stopped being all Jewy and accepted Jesus Christ as her personal Lord and Savior? Yeah. They're on the march, babies. Yeah. 17 minutes past the hour, and that's a lot of filibustering for a Moran Monday, and we're not even done with all the Morans. Lots and lots of Morans. And we haven't even gotten to the ones that I thought were real, held real promise. Nope, not at all. So we'll open up the phone lines. Area code 304-574-8178 is one line. The other line is area code 304-663-HORN. Area code 304-663-4676. They're both open, as is the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype, if you want to do that. If you've never sent me a contact request, feel free to do so, and we can engage in conversation that way. Lots of opportunities for communication here. You can reach me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid, on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. Lots of different possibilities. So we'll take a little break. I love this song. And we'll just finish it off this time with no references to Kevin Doran. Okay? Yeah. We try to raise $150 every evening. We are at $130 to go. Thank you very kindly, Gerald, for getting us started. Hopefully some other folks will join in and help Gerald out so that we don't suddenly stop being a broadcast operation anytime in the near future. The PayPal interface is under the tab called Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And, yeah, like I said, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. I'm Bob Kincaid. Just imagine this being sung by a guy in a dress with a House of Whoville hat. And the Irish accent I won't do. And it is 22 minutes past the hour on this More and Monday on the Horn. And let's go over to the Skype line where we are joined by News Ninja Carol Baker. Hey, Carol.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here reading this fascinating story about the puppy rehoming.
Yeah, do tell us about the threats, I guess, the threats against the reporter's life.
Not necessarily threats against his life exactly. He said responses to the story have been pouring in. Foster and adoptive parents have noted their difficulties in dealing with DHS before, during, and after adoptions. Advocates from other parts of the child welfare and mental health systems have given their input. So far, we haven't seen anything rebutting or refuting the facts of the article or critiquing its basic points, with one exception. Tuesday morning, as we were triple and quadruple checking the story before it was ever published, I got a text from a colleague of Harris, Representative Nate Bell, a Republican of Mena, Arkansas. He informed me that I'm going to burn in hell for writing the article exposing Harris, who he describes as a good man who has given his life to helping vulnerable children. I, on the other hand, am described by Bell as the lowest fork, I think he meant form, of muck-raking slime on earth. I'm attaching images of our full exchange below. Well, this Nate Bell initiated...
Wait. So the guy who gave away a little girl and let her get raped is a good, good man, but the guy who ratted him out is the lowest form of scum on earth, right?
Now you're getting it.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that I'm in the ballpark.
Okay, so Nate Bell, this libertarian shitwad, sends this text message. He says, "What you're doing to a good man makes you the lowest fork of muck-raking slime on earth. It's beyond comprehension that any human being could be that cruel to someone who has given their life to helping vulnerable children. I hope you and your ilk receive mercy when you leave this life and enter the next one." To which the reporter replied, "This good man you're talking about gave his adopted children away to a man who raped one of them. He won't explain why. I've asked multiple times. It's beyond my comprehension how someone could give away their child. And I'm cruel? A child was raped." Nate Bell writes back, "You have no idea what you're talking about. Honorable people protect victims and are not attempting to get a few blog hits by dragging their lives into the public square. Those who know the details are bound by confidentiality rules and honor not to disclose those details even when they are exculpatory. Hell has a special corner for the merciless. You're headed there. Invest in asbestos. Please don't contact me again for any reason." Please note that he initiated the contact.
Right. Well, yeah. And so is this libertarian another governmental type, or is he just some jackass on the Internet?
No. He's a libertarian type. And the reporter says, "Look, I've always gotten along with him. While I disagree with him, he's always been very straightforward, and I think he wants good things, but... you know, I've never had a bad word with this guy. He's always been very straightforward and open with me." But he writes back to the guy. He goes, "It's all in the prosecutor file, Nate. I believe you've spent your time in office extolling the need for disclosure and accountability. Now you're saying, just trust us. He's a good man. What hypocrisy. I expected more from you." He said, "If you ever contact me again, I'll report it as harassment. I'm specifically placing you on notice never to contact me again." And again, he initiated the contact.
Yeah, that's where I keep getting lost. It's a little swampy around that point.
Well, he said, "I've had limited but courteous exchanges with Bell in the past, although I strongly disagree with his libertarian-leaning politics. I've appreciated his willingness to take a stand on some controversial issues, such as a push to separate state recognition of Robert E. Lee from MLK Day, and his dogged insistence on fiscal accountability from hidebound state institutions. I thought he was intellectually honest, if wrong, on many or most issues, but sadly, he thinks someone asking hard questions about the actions of one of his fellow legislatures results in an eternal damnation." So he's essentially, you know, and this exchange took place before the article ever appeared in the paper. So,
wow.
Yeah. So he was.
Well, okay. So can you and I are good at this, Carol? Can we engage in some really rank speculation here?
Yes.
Would you care? Because I'm kind of whipped on this. I'm stumped. I've pondered on it for a little while, and I got nothing. What exculpatory information could there be regarding behavior of a 6-year-old little girl that would make it obvious that she needed to be rehomed and raped?
It depends. What was she wearing?
Okay. All right. So I see you're having the same problems I did.
Yeah, I'm having exactly the same problems.
Because, you know, the right wing asks these kind of questions. I mean, you're in Todd Akin country, after all. What did the 6-year-old do to Mr. and Mrs. God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical Christian governmental representing types? What did she do to them that was so awful to deserve it, if you will?
Well, we're not allowed to know that. But I don't know, you quote a Bible verse, walk away, and sneak out the back door. That's your answer. That's all we can get from him.
I mean, you reckon maybe she wasn't speaking good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing English like the Lord intended?
I don't know. Nothing in my rationale says that a 6-year-old could possibly have done anything to deserve to be given away to somebody. I mean, they hadn't had her that long. Her and her sister. They just had not had these kids that long.
What if she didn't want to pray to Jesus?
Yeah. That right there is enough to get you sent to the rape camp.
Yep.
Not that I'm saying that he knew that this guy would do that, but it's the
whole... I don't think he did, because after all, he had employed the rapist in his child care center, hadn't he?
And fired him for being irresponsible and not showing up to work.
But he was responsible enough. He was responsible enough to be handed a pair of precious little 3- and 6-year-old little girls.
Right. But his real crime was not clocking in on time.
Yeah. Probably got caught carrying a one of them ballpoint pens home too.
Yeah, exactly. Stealing office supplies. But
the larger question is, why is there nothing in the criminal code of Arkansas that can be found that will fit this monster's conduct? And I'm not talking about the rapist. I'm talking about the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical Christians.
No, because what he did was not illegal. That's the problem. And it's the same in a lot of states. There are very few states in this country that make what he did illegal. And again, it's a situation of just because you have the right to do it, doesn't make it the right thing to do.
Yeah. But what about child endangerment?
Well, here's the thing, is that there's a reason why they vet parents before they allow them to adopt.
I mean, there are states in the union where they will take children away from parents if the parents smoke in the car with the children.
That's right. But he just leapfrogged that whole problem and gave those kids away. I can only assume out of a sense of convenience. They were willing. These people were willing to take the kids. And now we know why.
And how did they find out that... I'm not trying to play the devil's advocate here. But how did they find out that these people were willing to take the kids unless they were trying to find someone willing to take the kids?
That's it.
I go up to the Wiggling Pig and there's a bulletin board up there. And it'll say there'll be a little thing, a little sheet of paper, and they'll have, you know, 12 phone the same phone number written down 12 times. And somebody will have taken a pair of scissors and cut, so you can just tear off the little phone number. And it'll say, oh, I don't know, free to good home, Irish Wolfhound Chihuahua mix puppies.
Yeah, something like that.
And maybe a picture of the cute, I don't know how cute they'd be. Come on, they'd probably be adorable, wouldn't they? So there's that, you know, free kitties, free puppies, free formerly abused foster children?
I guess.
Because these children had been pre-abused, had they not?
Yes, they had. Which means you should know what you're getting into before you take them in.
And what's this line out of these emails about, you know, we've all had problems with the Department of Children and Families. I mean,
no, that didn't go on in the emails. The reporter was saying that he had been contacted by many people who had issues with DHS regarding children they had adopted, because DHS was all over them like a bad rash, because, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that, and, you know, you can't smoke in the car, you have to go to church, you have to do, you know, that kind of stuff. But DHS sure wasn't checking on this guy, and why, my guess, is probably because he was an elected public official, and they ran a Christian daycare center, and they had it all looking good on the outside. And like most of these people, it's very easy to overlook the rot that's going on the inside.
See, I just, this is one of those places where you can't help thinking that a determined, creative prosecuting attorney,
yeah,
could find something to charge this jackass with. But by the same token, if you do that, you'll never be, you won't be prosecutor no more after the next election.
That's right. Bob, I adopted a blue heeler like 16 years ago, and I had to sign papers saying that if for any reason I couldn't keep him, I had to give him back to the people. I couldn't just rehome this dog.
No, and I'll bet that phrase wasn't in vogue back then, because like I said, rehome is a new, brand new, shiny, spanking new, never heard of it before verb, rehome.
Right, and it's
I mean, rehoming sounds like what takes place when the kid leaves school at the end of the day.
Right, but it's slick talk for abandonment.
Yeah.
Because that's what he did. It was just too damned hard. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, with Jesus, aren't all things possible?
Well, you keep running across, it's like the story about Elvin Bishop, Kevin Doran, about things happening that God doesn't intend. You know, it's not like you. Jesus!
I've been told God doesn't make junk.
Yeah. And was it Jesus loves the little children, red and yellow, black and white? They are precious in His sight. Jesus loves the little children of the world. Just not some of them.
Convenient.
See, now this is now. Remember, you know my standing argument that the motto of the United States on the coinage should be changed from In God We Trust to Calvin Coolidge's statement, the business of America is business.
That's right.
I think if you were to investigate and drill down far enough with this creep, you'd find out that the money wasn't right.
That's right.
Because there is money does change hands when you adopt children who have special needs. Does it not?
Yes.
And so, the guy is running a daycare center.
Mm-hmm.
He is suckling at the public teat for all he is worth, while at the same time hollering about how he doesn't believe in big government.
Right.
So, he gets a lot of money, and maybe the money just wasn't right here. Maybe he was expecting more money than he got, or maybe he was expecting money and didn't get any money at all.
Could be.
And all of these, you know, it's not like these are state secrets. These are all discoverable things, and the reason I'm harping on them, Carol, is because if there's any real interest in discovering this, a prosecutor can discover them.
Absolutely.
What about prosecuting the agency that placed these two children with the good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, evangelical Christian couple?
Oh, I think all that is eventually going to come out, because now Now they pissed this reporter off, and he's not going to lay this down.
I just wonder if he's got the access that, you know, that a lawyer armed with the power and majesty of the state would have.
I doubt it. Because so many of those records are closed, because, you know, you're dealing with juveniles and...
Right, and you're dealing with Arkansas. I mean,
and you're dealing with Arkansas, although not. I don't want to belabor that point. I just wanted to put that out there because I wanted to expand the story. But you know, there is one more. There is one more, Moran. I want to.
Oh, do tell.
Yes, Tennessee State Senator Joseph Hensley. He's the one who got the Don't Say Gay bill passed in Tennessee.
Oh, I remember him well.
Remember him?
Yeah, he's the guy who was going to stomp some gay person into a mud hole, too, you might recall.
That's right. Well, his ex-wife has accused him of both hitting her with the door of his truck and pushing legislation based on their divorce. She has three witnesses who saw the event. Their statements are on file at the sheriff's office. This guy's a doctor, I might add, and apparently after the divorce, she was moving into her new house when he showed up in his pick-em-up truck and accused her of taking items that didn't belong to her. So she's standing there talking to him.
You are not going to take my wagon wheel coffee table and my family Bible.
Exactly. So she's talking to him. She's got the car door, the truck door is open on the passenger side. She's talking to him. He slams it in reverse, hits her with the door, and knocks her down. And she's screaming, "Stop, Joey, you're going to run over me." And he eventually hit her again with the door while she was trying to close it and told her he'd come back. She called 911, and... He said, "Well, I certainly would not hurt anyone. I'm a doctor. I've been a doctor for 29 years, and I would certainly never jeopardize what it's taken years to achieve." Now, this bill that he has started, the bill would enable judges overseeing divorce proceedings to decide how the property is going to be distributed by both parties. Now, I thought that that was all taken care of with the lawyers beforehand, before it was finalized.
Well, and if that goes in, that... He's gonna become the beloved darling of every divorce court judge in the three great states of Tennessee.
Absolutely.
Because that really is where divorces get ugly. I referenced the wagon wheel coffee table because of that scene from When Harry Met Sally, where Billy Crystal says, you know, figure out who's going to have this now, because you're going to want, you'll spend $50,000 arguing over who gets it in the divorce.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So this is the guy who, in February 2012, he introduced what he called the Don't Say Gay Bill, which essentially bans elementary and middle school teachers from addressing any issues concerning the LGBT communities. And he said at the time that he wants to keep students away from the alternative lifestyles, or, as the rest of us call it, life. And then just over a year later, he introduced another bill allowing college counselors to cite religious objections in rejecting LGBT students who were considering suicide, so that they just don't have to deal with them. Oh, you're gay and you're considering suicide because you're being bullied? Well, guess what? Go kill yourself. Because
right.
I'm not here to help you, because I think you're sick. And the world would be a better place without you. So, but this fine man, and I'll tell you, I saw his picture, and I thought, God, this looks like a sumbitch who would run you over with his truck.
Oh, yeah, is there any doubt?
Oh, yeah. Pretty sick. Pretty sick. But those were the two that caught my eye today. So,
well, I got a couple sitting here yet, Carol. If you'd care to share,
well, hit it.
You may remember that during the 8 long tormented years of the dim leader administration,
the reign of error,
we found out that the how best to put this, that the Veterans Administration had fallen into dire disrepair.
Yes. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, thanks, Obama. In advance, even. He folds space. He's a third-stage guild navigator, too, you know.
It's amazing.
Well, according to a report in the Indianapolis Star, an individual by the name of Robin Paul, who's a social worker, managing what is called the Seamless Transition Integrated Care Clinic, which spells stick with two C's, at the Rowdebush Veterans Affairs Medical Center.
Yeah.
Well, Robin Paul sent around an email that shows photographs of a toy Christmas elf. And the toy Christmas elf is posed in one of the clinics there in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject line is Naughty Elf in the Stick Clinic.
Okay.
And the elf is captioned saying, out of Xanax, please help. Self-medicating for mental health issues when a CNS would not give him his requested script. In other words, mocking people who are badly in need of, you know, medication because of things that happened to them while serving the United States of America.
And what was this person's position in this clinic?
This person was the, and I'm not kidding, manager of the Stick Clinic.
Really?
Yeah, it gets better, or worse. There was another photograph of the naughty stick elf having hanged itself. And the caption on that photo was, caught in the act of suicidal behavior, trying to hang himself from an electrical cord. Now, this is, of course, in a real-world context of 22 veteran suicides every day.
Does this guy still have a job? Of course he does.
Well, we don't know if it's a guy or a girl. Robin's one of those unisex names.
Oh, yeah.
So, the Indianapolis Star contacted Robin Paul. And Robin Paul said, well, you'll just have to take that up with our public affairs department. And then a statement came out from the public relations department that said, I would like to sincerely apologize for the email message, and I take full responsibility for this poor judgment. I have put my heart and soul into my work with veterans for many years. I hold all veterans and military personnel in the highest regard and am deeply remorseful for any hurt this may have caused. Yeah, high regard, you know, except when sending around emails that mocks veteran suicide.
Yeah, that's your standard non-apology apology. If mm-hmm. you were offended, I apologize to anyone who may have been offended. May have been offended? I'm not a veteran, and I'm fucking offended.
Because this is an offense that was committed in our name. Because, you know, Veterans Administration care is rendered to people who have served in the armed forces in our name. Let's see, Julie Webb is the hospital spokeswoman, and she said, the email is totally inappropriate and does not convey our commitment to veterans. We apologize to our veterans and take suicide and mental health treatment seriously, striving to provide the highest quality. And Robin Paul has been disciplined. And when people said how, well, I'm not allowed to tell.
Of course not. Don't do that anymore, Robin. Don't do that.
Stop. Or I'll say, stop again.
Go away, or I shall have to taunt you again.
A second time. Oh, yes, I told him it's a pair of nice. But, oh, God.
Yeah, these are the people I want to choke out. And I'm a pacifist, but I see crap like that, and it's like, how did you ever get into a position of any sort of authority that you would think that this was remotely appropriate?
No, it's not the inappropriate part. It's the she thought it was funny. He thought it was funny part.
Apparently, Robin's a she.
Oh, did you look her up?
I think Ron did in the chat room.
Oh, okay.
I'm multitasking.
Okay, and I've got I got a story for you from Iowegia.
Oh dear, I always take these personally.
I understand. Melody Lauer is a mama in Iowegia. She's got three youngins. And, well, she's been credentialed as a sure enough no kidding firearms instructor by the National Republican Rifle Association.
Charming.
She's worked for gun stores. She's worked at shooting ranges. So she knows her Second Amendment remedies. Now, among other things, she is also an educator.
A teacher?
Well, no, I didn't say that. I said an educator. You know, she educates people on how to pack their freedom protectors and how to shoot their freedom protectors but in other instances, she's worked at a parenting center. She's taught attachment parenting and she's taught childbirth and how to properly put your baby sling on you so you can carry your baby around safely and properly. And she's even taught breastfeeding classes.
Great.
Okay. I mean, she's the soul of an Iowa mom, you know?
No, not so much.
All gunned up it gets worse. She heard the story, and we know the story here, Carol, of the nuclear scientist in Idaho who was so terrified of life that she could not go from her home in Idaho to the Wally World without carrying her Freedom Protector in her special Christmas Day Freedom Protector purse, which her two-year-old in the shopping cart got into lickety-split and then blew Mommy away.
That's right. Shot her in the head right there in health and beauty aids.
Yeah. So, because Melody Lauer cares about mamas and cares about babies, she said, The idea for the class came out of hearing about the kid in Idaho who shot his mom recently. That touched me in a very deep way because my daughter was two at the time. I thought, there's no reason this should happen. We are adults and can be responsible. So, what's her answer? What? Her answer is to offer a baby-wearing and carrying firearms class. How to put your baby in the little baby carrier on your front and maybe pack a pistol in next to baby. She offered the class for the first time in February at Crossroads Shooting Sports, Central Iowa's premier shooting range and training center. And a dozen moms and a few dads even showed up to learn how to pack heat with your baby.
Well, now I keep thinking about the boob holster.
Right. And so yeah, that worked out well. The holster bra. And she says, I've co-slept with my babies. I've been wearing my babies. I've loved them, and I've worn a gun the whole time. She said, I always caution people if they're carrying a gun to feel safe, then they're carrying it for the wrong reason.
Name a right one.
Well, see, there's that. But she's full of practical advice, Carol. She says, if you have baby on one side, it's best to have the gun on the other side.
You think?
Yeah, Earther pointing out, babies and guns, two great things that go great together. I just wonder where she's going to put the fifth of Jack. I mean, why not go for it all? And you know, maybe the baby carrier has a little meth pouch in it, too.
Ooh.
Gerald went to the same place you did. Gerald said, does she breastfeed while using her gun bra? That creates just a horrifying image for me because we've all seen it now, haven't we? Yeah. Iowa. Be proud. Be proud, Iowa. Hi, Barbie.
She's chewing her leg off while we're talking about it.
Meanwhile, Ron is, I suppose, entrusted with the Horn official entrepreneurial spirit. Ron pointing out, I sense an emerging market for Kevlar baby carriers. It's out there. And you know what? I'll bet you could advertise it on right-wing radio shows, and they'd snap them. Who am I kidding? Come on. They already exist, don't they? I bet somebody's doing homework right now and reaching out and finding it. Yeah, I bet you there's a Kevlar baby carrier with a holster on it.
Or a nursing bra with the gun holster and the special meth pipe pouch and the jack sling.
Yeah, an NRA nursing bra, maybe with nipple cutouts that look like gun muzzles.
Ooh. Well, it'll give the kid good practice for the day that he puts the gun in his mouth and pulls the trigger.
Yeah, maybe he can join the military and let Robin Paul take care of him in Indianapolis. I mean, it's not that far from Iowa to Indiana, is it?
No, not at all. Just a couple states away.
Yeah.
One quick hop over Illinois and you're in Indianistan.
Oh, and quick news update. This just rolled in from the New York Times. You might find this interesting. The municipal court in Ferguson has had its jurisdiction supplanted.
Really?
The Missouri Supreme Court announced just this evening that a state judge is going to take over all municipal court cases in Ferguson. And this, of course, on the heels of the Department of Justice report that noted that Ferguson has used its court system as a means of oppressing and punishing and terrorizing and tormenting its community of color.
Boy, I bet that was big news to the Ferguson community.
Yeah, no kidding. Immediately after the report came out, Ronald J. Brockmeyer, the current municipal judge, just resigned. So Roy...
Is that the guy that owes $170,000 in back taxes?
I kind of wonder. I didn't have a chance to look that up, but I wonder. So Judge Roy L. Richter, who has been on the state appeals court, is going to move to the circuit court in St. Louis County and be in charge of all municipal cases in Ferguson.
Well, the mayor says there's no problem. After all, they've hired two black court reporters.
Well, ain't that enough? I mean, they're really not smart enough to be judges, are they?
Not really.
You know, that sounds dirty even as sarcasm.
Oh, I know. I know. I get to the point to where I either want to say something really obnoxious that could come off sounding bad, or I just want to say, fuck it.
Yeah, I know. Tim from L.A. is having problems with the Iowa gun mom. So instead of giving up your purse or wallet while you're lugging the little kid around, don't the parents know that the explosion of a bullet can damage the ear of the baby, or do they put ear covers and earplugs in while they shoot and shop? Tim says, after living in Los Angeles for more than 48 years, my parents had no need for firearms, and my hard of hearing was due to rock music, not a .45 caliber Freedom Protector going off by my ear. Oh, and you might find this interesting, Jim with an email. He says, during Operation Desert Shield Storm, I was a medical actions officer and encountered much intransigence and denial of recognition and treatment of vets injured and sick while deployed to Southwest Asia. They refused to honor directives referenced said maladies and injuries unless pressed very hard to do so. Sandfly disease in particular, indigenous to that part of the world. TBA was not recognized by many military treatment facilities. Traumatic brain. Jim notes, heartbreaking. I was told I represented the government, not the troops. It was very bad.
I'm sure that was quite a surprise to him to find out he represented the government and not the troops.
Well, I mean, excuse me, how is there a philosophic, where the Veterans Administration is concerned, and perhaps Jim would like to elaborate, how is there a gulf between the two? And the government, of course, is not the government. The government is we the people trying to form a more perfect union, right?
Well, that was my impression, but I'm learning things. This is such a learning experience.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, Carol, it's awful good to hear from you this evening. I hope you're warming up a little bit out in Hooterville. We golly Moses, we got up in the 50s today.
It was 60 here today. It's supposed to be 70 here tomorrow, and the lake has thawed.
Oh my goodness! It'll be bikini season there at the Hooterville Mansion soon.
Only if I want them to turn their music down.
Oh, God, no, we got up to around 56 or so today, and you know what? In Appalachia, when the snow melts, everywhere you step, it squishes.
It's the same here. It's the same here, because we just, I mean, it was a week ago, I was digging my cars out where the snowplow man was enacting revenge upon me, and now the snow's all gone.
Yeah. And it leaves behind its aftermath of mud.
Yes, and you know these paved roads in Hooterville.
Oh, I'm sure they look like a connect the dots game now, don't they?
Pretty much.
Between the potholes.
I've got one way in to get to my house, and if they don't do something with that one road, that one corner, pretty quick, I'm going to be parking the car and walking.
Well, you best be careful. You'll be breaking a tie rod in the Maybach, and that's expensive, I hear.
Well, considering it's a borrowed Maybach off the Maybach lot, that probably wouldn't go over well.
Well, I know you wouldn't sit still when the boss offered you the Ferrari, so.
I know, but I did have to turn in the Hummer.
Yeah, I can imagine. But it got you where you were going, right?
Well, actually, we did have a Hummer on the lot a year ago, and I did borrow it during.
Did
a
it have the machine? Yeah, I was going to ask you. Did it have the machine gun turret on it?
It didn't, but I'll tell you what; those sons of bitches can go anywhere.
Yeah, they've got a little longer wheelbase than a Jeep does, and that makes them a little less prone to turning over.
Well, and I'll tell you what, after I got done putting the mortgage payment in the gas tank, it was all fun.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You've got to have your loan officer on speed dial just to go to the gas station in one of those bastards.
Oh, it can't go by a gas station without going, drink.
It's like the college bar district.
Yeah, something like that.
You got to stop in every one, right. Well, have yourself a lovely evening.
You too, my friend.
And we will talk soon.
Yes, we will.
All right.
Take care.
See ya. Bye. News Ninja Carol Baker calling from Hooterville. And we will. We are at the top of the hour, the final hour of the program rolling in. And let's go see what Bill's got going on. Hey, Bill.
Good evening.
How in the world are
conversation
you?
Usual for you folks? Well, I mean, he played Bishop's thing tonight. And I don't know. He did sing. I don't know about for sure, but whether he was singing that or not.
No, that wasn't him singing. I forget.
Okay.
Who's the guy who went on and did vocals for Jefferson Starship?
It could have been because they were. Well, Paul and those guys spent a lot of time on the West Coast. When they first went to San Francisco, people were just amazed because it's like when they were playing at Newport and the guy says, there's a bunch of white guys from Chicago. Well, he must have not looked very hard at the bass player and the drummer. And I had the pleasure of working with that drummer, man. He was a monster. But anyway, because you could find him singing on...
Mickey Thomas. Mickey Thomas.
Well, okay.
Mickey Thomas was the vocalist.
Bishop does sing on a thing called... oh, God, I'm drunk again. He did it, and Bloomfield left after two albums with Butterfield, and he went out and started the other one, the big band that he had on the West Coast. But I was playing in Canton, and I had met Bishop years ago, and a couple of times I saw him, talked to him for a few minutes, and we were playing at the Canton Blues Festival. That is a place to play if ever was one, I'll tell you. Canton Blues Festival, I don't know. And of course, they brought the Canton Bulldogs back to play a tag team professional football. They were, well, National Football League. Don't even start me on that shit, but that's another story. Anyhow, thanks for playing them. You can find that drunk again on Electric. It goes quickly, and it's funnier than hell, because he was I think he was an Oklahoma guy. He was supposedly going to the first back, the back part of the album where you read about the band. He was supposedly going to the University of Chicago. So, figure that one out, huh?
Well, now you got me curious, and I'm looking around.
Yeah. The LP was entitled Resurrection of Big Boy Crabshaw, and it was the Butterfield Band minus Bloomfield, because that's where they got the name for the LP, because he was back as playing the number one lead guitar player, you know.
Yeah.
And Butterfield, he, saucy kind of a guy he was, but, you know, that's the music business, buddy. I avoided that. I could drink a half a fifth of gin in a given night. That's a lot. But and also Latin American vegetation was a big thing in my world.
you've got an entire notebook full of euphemisms for that, don't you?
Oh, hell yeah. Then again, what do you say? Well, your father was busted with a pound of it in 1946. And what kept him out of jail was my uncle's connections with the man who ran the mob in Cleveland, because my uncle was a master repairman of any kind of a mechanical or electronic game cigarette machine. You put it in front of him, he could fix it. I mean, I walked into the basement when I was about five or six, and there's some slot machines sitting on the floor in the basement. Yeah, my dad's brother was a little shady at times, you know. But he could never join the organization, you know.
Well, yeah.
But they treated him well. Because he made money for him.
He couldn't pass the DNA test, right?
Well, no, he also had a TV repair business and he had jukeboxes. He had a device that looked like a jukebox. You open the front up and you put your turntable and your tuner and tape and close the door. So and the lights would flash on it. It was a beautiful piece of real funny furniture, you know. I mean, it wasn't oak and wasn't that kind of furniture. It was just something that I wish I had. To this day, I wish I had it. You could play all your stuff out of it, and it looked like a big jukebox. But I got a little of his talent, but I wish I had gotten more of it. I got too much of my father's, you know. And that's a dead, maybe a dead end street, but you make a living doing it. Because that was the way it was done in my dad's era. You made a living. You didn't get rich. You weren't a millionaire. But, you know, this is what you did because you were damn good at it. You enjoyed it. And during the
and with any luck at all, it kept the bills paid.
Pardon?
And with any luck at all, it kept the bills paid.
Yep. Well, my dad got a job with working on airplane parts during the war, and he told me in later years that Bill, I inspected that stuff carefully because, that was my duty. He said some other human being was going to be going, more, three or four of them are going to be going up that airplane. And the stuff we were turning out was junk. I didn't want any part of it, you know. So he had his mind in the right place there, and, well, it was a system, torpedo system that was made by Gould here in Cleveland. And all the submarines operating off the Philippines during the Japanese invasion in 1942, you know, the damn torpedoes are running 2 feet below where they should have run.
Oh, we had terrible, we had terrible torpedo problems, both in the subsurface and as well as in the airborne ones. Because our torpedo planes had to get to almost stall speed and had to fly flat and level at 100 feet or less above the waves. And if everything didn't go just right, it didn't work.
Yeah, that they were, you know, as time went on, the whole thing, the U.S. built too many damn good things. I'm working on a book called Street Without Joy. It's the, Bernard Fall was a correspondent in Indochina in the first Vietnam War, which, for a tale, which is one of many, I'm sure, down through the history. But his stuff, when you read it, you can see that the French were going to lose. Well, we had better equipment, and you know those French, they're a bunch of sissies. Actually, they weren't sending draftees over there. They, but you know, the outfit that spoke with a German accent was over there.
Yeah.
Because that was a really good book on that Foreign Legion and how it started, and of course, that was the place everybody ran away to. You know, you want to get out of the lost season, join the Foreign Legion, great. I'll take my chances with a sheriff. He can be bribed. Yeah, maybe. Anyway, I won't keep you, but that, yeah, I had the actors. And Bishop was one hell of a fine guitar player, and that band was so damn good that, you know, that's what I tried to live up to for all those years, and we came pretty damn close most of the time. I can't complain. The guys I worked with were very, very good. I still talk to most of them. I see my piano player almost every other day. He stops by to, I need a ride somewhere. He lives about 5-10 minutes away, and he's retired. He was a photographer for Chase Western Reserve, and he still does a lot of photo jobs, and he still uses a 35mm, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't use a...
Shoots film.
Yeah, you know, this other stuff. Anyway, you take care and stay out of trouble, and I'll talk to you tomorrow, I hope.
All right. Sounds good, Bill. You take care.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Bill. Calling from Cleveland. Yeah, apparently there's an Iowa theme working tonight. Elvin Bishop grew up in Elliott, Iowa. And then his family moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, when he was 10. So I guess grew up isn't entirely accurate. But born Glendale, California, then to Elliott, Iowa, then to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yeah. A little bit of trivia. Thank you to Kim for pointing out that it was Mickey Thomas that sang Fooled Around and Fell in Love and then moved on to Starship. Appreciate it. Both lines are open if you want to jump in on the conversation, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. So far this evening, Gerald is out there all by himself in our attempt to meet our evening fundraising goal and maybe catch up with some of the backlog. All help is good help for anyone who would care to participate. Yeah, 10 past the hour. It's funny, making mention of the Dalai Lama a little bit ago, he being Buddhist and all, and the Pope of Protestantism, Pat Robertson, pointing out that he is, that he has a sickness, yeah, Buddhism. The ongoing tiff between, and it's quite the serious tiff, really, between His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and the Chinese government of the People's Republic of China, who, of course, occupied Tibet. He really upset the Chinese government when he announced that when he dies, he intends not to reincarnate. The Chinese are pissed. He was denounced by the Chinese-appointed governor of Tibet today for refusing reincarnation. The government of the People's Republic of China has said, "Oh, of course he'll reincarnate, because that means that the People's Republic of China can then declare who the reincarnated Dalai Lama is, and it will of course be someone to their liking, who will say, 'Gosh, we all really love being occupied by the Chinese here in Tibet.'" Tibet Regional Governor Padma Choling said, if the central government had not approved it, how could he have become the 14th Dalai Lama? He couldn't. It has a serious procedure. I think that, in fact, he is profaning religion and Tibetan Buddhism. If he says no reincarnation, then no reincarnation? Impossible. Nobody in Tibetan Buddhism would agree to that. We must respect history, respect and not profane Tibetan Buddhism. But the problem is, we're talking about Buddhism here, and pretty much anything goes. And I think that is simply hilarious. It's almost like the Dalai Lama knows that, that it's a little bit made up. And the problem is, according to the German paper, The World on Sunday, Die Welt am Sonntag, he said, if a weak Dalai Lama comes along, then it will just disgrace the Dalai Lama. And went on to say that even if I chose to be reborn, if I was reborn in Tibet, I wouldn't be free. And that nobody gets to choose his successor, not even the Chinese government, for political ends. Bless his heart. I like that man a lot. If we're going to play parlor games with who's going to be the Dalai Lama, then, well, the Dalai Lama just upped the ante a little bit. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
My name is Rich. I'm calling from New Jersey, from a minor tributary of the Appalachian Mountains, known as the Watchung Mountains. Better try to rise as the Watchung Hills, in my estimation.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, we spoke once a long time ago, about 5 years ago, after your show was over. I called you late one night, and we spoke for a while.
Yes, I actually remember that.
I haven't had a chance to talk to you since, because it was only recently that I had access through tuning to listen to your show nightly, and I've been enjoying it for the better part of 6 months now.
Wonderful. I'm glad to know it.
And I finally got a chance to get in and actually talk to you. And I always look forward to Moray on Monday and prayer meeting Wednesday. I always look forward to those two nights in particular, because I am a rebellious expatriate, unsaved, former Catholic, who has no intentions ever to return to that religion.
Yeah, you're I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. You're a recovering Roman Catholic.
Right. And the whole deal being here is I listen more and more to you every week, particularly on Mondays and Wednesdays. You have certainty of Christianity becomes more and more apparent to me. And I try not to. All my family are really devout Catholics. There's a tune-in radio that have programs for atheists called Thinking Atheists is one of them.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Are you familiar with that particular program?
Yeah, I said
it's really good. It's really good. They do it's a weekly series, and they tackle all kinds of subjects relating to faith and reason. And I find myself more and more, although I still am a believer in a divine source of some kind, being more and more enticed by the idea of reason as being having supremacy over blind faith. And but you know, although I am enticed by that, I don't think I can ever become an atheist, because I think I really believe that for some reason this is all going to make sense in a way I can't understand, because it's so absurd that on the face of it all, and sort of life in general, and particularly in America these days, that I have to think it's an aberration, what's been going on. More than anything by design, it's actually a manifestation of chaos disguised as reason or order by people that are out of their minds. And I believe, you know, I'm an old Trekkie, and I'll actually be a Trekkie and a Star Wars aficionado, and I mean, there is a force, you know, that's really working behind the scenes that somehow is making sense out of everything, although I can't understand it all. And maybe I'm being deceived by my need to believe that there's actually some kind of order underlying the universe, as with the string theory, the idea of string theory being an interconnected concept. So, you know, if nothing else, even if there's no, I don't believe in a personal God or a gender-identified deity, but I think there's got to be something making this all make sense. But it doesn't really manifest itself in any kind of congruent way on this planet, unfortunately.
Well, you know, since we've been talking about Buddhists this evening, it's worth noting that I guess a Zen Buddhist would say that the surest road to madness is to try to answer questions of the heart with the faculties of the mind, and vice versa.
Yes, I absolutely understand that concept. You know, and I've been really trying to, like, have reason be my guidepost, even though I do believe in some kind of divine force, if you will, holding everything together. But I do accept the primacy of reason, because I consider myself an adherent of the Age of Enlightenment. And I believe our founding fathers were enlightened human beings, that if they were to be resurrected today, they'd be totally...
First of all, if it did today, it would be the first time in human history that has ever occurred. Just like virgin births. But beyond that, how can I say this? I think I've said it before. My skepticism is of organized religion. Of anybody who says, I've got the answer, I figured it out, listen to me. Because what's happened is that person has likely found something that worked for him or her. But to try to build some magic words about it, and, you know, there's special headgear involved, and you gotta pray in a certain direction, please.
You know what? I don't truck with any of that. But I do persist in my need to, even if it's just a personal delusion on my part, to believe that in some way, beyond my understanding, the universe has some sense to it.
Oh, it does. The universe operates according to a very, very rigid set of immutable laws.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, that's why I can't completely understand what the atheists are driving at, because, like, they say that absence of proof is not proof, you know, to use the argument that absence of proof does not constitute proof of absence. Yeah, I understand that, but at the same time, just because I can't personally reason it out that there are forces that are moving in the universe to consolidate it, you know, this idea that everything has to be verified by my senses, you know, I mean, did X-rays not exist before the X-ray machine was invented? Were gamma rays out of the universe before they could be detected? So to say that there's not something running the universe, not as a deity, but as a force, and that there's just total chaos.
See, I tend to think the universe is the universe, and the universe is the force that runs the universe.
Right, but so you're saying that there is some kind of consistency where, like, as you said, immutable laws that are operative beyond even reason, because reason would...
Well, I mean, the laws existed before the laws were discovered. Newton, right. You know, Newton explained gravity, but it didn't mean that everybody was floating off the planet before Newton came along. And you know, the apple fell from the tree to the earth. It didn't rise from the earth to the tree.
Right, and yet now, we've come full circle, and these fundamentalists that you're talking about, these evangelical fundamentalists, some of them are even denying the force of gravity.
Well, sure they are. I mean, look at the story we started Moran Monday with. The governor of Florida, who repeatedly declares, you know, I'm not a scientist, still feels comfortable enough to ban the use of, and really, okay, climate change and global warming and sea level rise, you know, I can see a right-winger getting rid of that. Because they are right-wingers and they have absolutely no ability to shock me anymore. All right, but Rick Scott also banned the use of the word sustainability, and all sustainability means is stuff that you can count on working for a long time.
But aren't they by the nature of evangelical fundamentalists committed to the idea that they want sustainability to become it's operative, because then when that happens, Jesus will come back. They need chaos for Jesus to come back.
Well, Carl Sagan said it best. He said that these people live in a demon-haunted world.
Yes.
And see, when you live in a demon-haunted world, gravity can just stop working sometimes.
Right.
I got a perfect example of that right here in the stack. There are some police in Utah who say that, and you know, it's Utah, maybe it was the voice of Brigham Young, who knows. But there's a big story coming out of Utah today about a baby who survived a near drowning in a frigid river. Mama had a car accident and drove the car into the river, and it flipped upside down, okay? Baby was in the car seat and was suspended above the icy waters until it could be rescued. So when the Utah police officers were searching, Spanish Fork, Utah police, when they were searching, they claimed that they heard a voice calling out for help. Now, the baby that was in the car was a baby, as in not speaking any languages yet. And the car was upside down in the river. And the cops say that they heard a voice calling out for help. But when they turned the car over, the little baby, 18-month-old Lily, was still alive, but her mama, Lynn Jenny Grosbeck, was dead. And the a fisherman saw the car about 12:30 at night Saturday, called police, and Officer Brian DeWitt said, "We were down on the car, and a distinct voice says, 'Help me, help me.' It wasn't something that was just in our heads," said Officer Tyler Beddoes, who said the child, it didn't sound like a child's voice. Tyler Beddoes said, "To me, it was plain as day because I remember hearing a voice. I think it was DeWitt who said, 'We're trying. We're trying our best to get in there.'" And then he said, "How do you explain that?" "I don't know."
The most obvious explanation would be that delusional mental projection of some kind, that they actually heard a voice that did not exist.
Right, and it motivated them.
Right. Well, at least they rescued the baby, even though they were delusional. So I give them props for that. But too many times, their delusional voices move them in directions that are, shall we say, lethal.
Right. And for me, you know, stories like that, the best I can do is to put that one under the column with the quote from Shakespeare that says, "There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies," and leave it at that.
And that is as good and a hypothetical explanation as anything, because that really ties in what we were starting to talk before about science and reason. True science and reason, in my estimation, leaves unanswered questions open to further investigation. And if you come from the premise that there are many things not yet understood, but that maybe someday they will be understood, well, that's reason. You know, superstition will come up with an easy explanation. Oh, you know, it's just a mystery. Accept it as a mystery. But that's not what reason does.
Well, but you know, lightning, rain, freaking rain was a mystery back when the Bible was written.
Right.
Okay? Especially the Old Testament, especially the first five books of the Bible. But apparently one of the books of Kings defines pi as 3.0, so I guess that, you know, math was a mystery too. And so was, you know, planetary movement, because there's the story about how the sun stood still in the sky, which means that the sun, they believed in the first place that the sun moved out around the earth. And everything is a mystery until we figure it out. And the long march of human existence has been a search to sort out what reality is. Now, meanwhile, you've got the Hindus and the Buddhists, and they say there is no reality. This is all illusion. This is all suffering. And the best thing you can do is get out. And, okay, I mean, that's kind of hard to argue with in many ways. But while we're here, we, curious little primates that we are, have been gifted with a great big brain. And that great big brain has done nothing but ask questions. And what you have out of the modern Republican Party is a rejection of that big brain curiosity. We don't want to know about global warming. We don't want to know about sea level rise. We don't want to know about climate change. We're just going to not believe it until the water is up to our necks. And the nice thing is, in other eras of ignorance and superstition, there's precedence.
Right.
Who is it? Is it King Canute in Old English history, who stands out at on the beach, and because he's a freaking king, orders the tide not to come in?
Right.
Yeah, how'd that work out, Canute? Yeah, it got all wet, because it came in anyway.
Or the Aztecs believe that if they ripped enough parts out of conquered Indian tribes, they could actually appease the sun god.
Well, no, it wasn't appeasement. It was just a matter of what the sun god was nourished with, and the sun god ate blood. Because
right, but what I remember seeing in the movie Apocalypto was that...
Oh, don't reference anything from that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was the one... I mean, I'm just referencing the... what I want to reference is just the deception of the high priest, who knew that an eclipse was coming, and then he made a pronouncement.
You know where Mel Gibson got that scene? Because Mel Gibson is, of course, religiously insane, a nasty bigot, and apparently a plagiarist. He stole that scene and transposed it into what was a Mayan. And see, no, I mean, I remember when Apocalypto came out, and all the cultural anthropologists who were specialized in that particular area of the world just went running around tearing at their clothing, saying, "I can't stand it no more. I can't stand it." Woo! Because it was so much BS. The Mayan civilizations with the pyramids and everything had collapsed a rock solid 300-400 years before Columbus arrived and Cortez found the eastern seaboard of Mexico and the Yucatan. They were gone. They didn't exist. But because Mel Gibson has to has to portray everything within the kaleidoscope of his weird, bizarre religious fixations. Well, he stole that story from Mark Twain.
So there is nothing at all of any kind of truth.
None. Because in Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, Merlin is a villain. And a modern, scientific, rational man named Hank Morgan gets transported back in time to King Arthur's Court, where he is in constant opposition to Merlin, because Merlin is a fraud and a charlatan. And so, because he knows the workings of science of the late 19th century, and that meant, and you know, they thought that they were the pinnacle of scientific understanding, as does every generation. Hank Morgan is able to make fool of Merlin by predicting an eclipse. And Mel Gibson stole that from Mark Twain and transposed it into his own paranoid maunderings about how nasty the native peoples were until the nice homicidal Catholic Christians came along and brought them salvation and lots of, you know, disease.
There was no history at all ever in either the Mayan or the Aztec culture of bloodthirsty human sacrifice.
Oh no, there was human sacrifice. There absolutely was human sacrifice. There was human sacrifice, and there was also a fragile population that inadvertently was managed by virtue of it. You know, the Spaniards were so horrified to see people being sacrificed to a demon god by the heathen Aztecs, who were not actually named Aztecs. Those people called themselves the Mexicas. They were aligned with some people called the Acolhua. There was a triple alliance around the, never mind. The Spaniards were shocked, I tell you, shocked. Meanwhile, back in Spain, their priests were burning people alive.
Right.
So, there was human sacrifice, but it was arguably done more swiftly, more humanely, and kind of more fair and square. Than the Spaniards did. The Spaniards, for instance, the Spanish Inquisition would burn, for instance, they compelled Jews to convert to Christianity. And the Spanish Catholic Inquisition would burn a Jew alive if they were caught, if they refused to eat pork. On the other hand, the Mexica people and one of their enemies, I think that was the Tezcalteca, they would go to war periodically for the purpose of swapping sacrificial victims. And the sacrificial victims were guaranteed by virtue of the operating mythos that the highest form of death one could have would be to either die on the battlefield or die laid back across a sacrificial stone and have one's heart fed to the god. Because immediately upon death, they would be transported to a place called Tonatiucan, which was the warrior paradise that you and I would both recognize as being an analog to, say, the Scandinavian Valhalla.
Right. Right. Yes, that makes perfect sense. So basically, what the Spanish did with the Inquisition, with the Jews, and then, of course, how they treated the native people in New World, simply a projection of their own need to horribly mutilate and destroy people.
Well, look, when the Spanish arrived in Mexica country, when they arrived in Tenochtitlan, and this is recorded in the historical accounts, they told the Mexica people that they had the Spanish said, we have a disease of the heart that can only be cured by gold. And, of course, that disease is avarice. That disease is greed.
And then they use that as a pretext to conquer the native people, take their gold, and then exterminate them anyway.
Most of them. Although, you know, it must be noted that there are a million or more people in Mexico to this day whose native language is still Nahuatl, which was the common language at the time of the Spanish arrival.
So then we could say that was the Spanish version of the Hitlerian Holocaust during World War II, with the same results, that it was a failure, because there's no way you're going to exterminate an entire population of people without some surviving to carry on your culture.
In point of fact, far more people were killed in the Native American genocide than were killed by the guy with the little nasty little man with the Charlie Chaplin mustache.
Right. Well, there's no question in my mind that that's true. That what you're saying is true. But to this day, you're saying there's still a thriving culture in
No. It's not thriving. The language is still alive, but a lot of the, I mean, Otomi is still a living language in Mexico. A number of the languages are still alive and are still being passed down. There's several native languages that still survive even in North America. To say the culture is thriving, not so much, because the Spanish wiped that after what the Spanish referred to as La Noche Triste. The Tenochtitlan, which was the most beautiful, most populous city on planet Earth, was razed to the ground. And that is where the first thing they... Well, all of it wasn't razed. There were a few palaces left over. The Spanish appropriated those and then used the stones from the pyramids and the city that they tore down to build the cathedral there in what is known as the Federal District of Mexico City, the DF.
So what they did was, in some ways, the equivalent of what, say, the Taliban did with those Buddhist statues.
Well, it's what any culture has done that has gone in and tried to erase another. But you know, some of the things survive. For instance, the Virgin of Guadalupe was thought to be an analog to a Spanish icon of the Virgin Mary, and yet if you look behind that, you can argue that that is the transposition of a Mexica goddess onto the Mary cult.
Well, I mean, that's the same old story. Christianity anywhere in this world supplanted, or attempted to supplant a native culture. They simply expropriated the existing gods and overlaid them with the...
Right. I mean, for instance, the Mexica people, because of the way their calendar worked, they had 5 days that weren't months. They just came up with their calendar was far more accurate than the European calendar was, but there were just five days at the end of the, and they, you know, they weren't part of a month, and just there they were. And so those were the five dead days, the Nemon Temtin, I think. So those 5 days, you know, you broke all your pots, you got rid of everything, you swept your house clean, and you remained as still as possible so as not to attract the notice of the gods, who they said were more prone to wipe out humanity during those 5 days than any other time of the year. And so now... Exactly. And, yeah, you know, that's the Day of the Dead. And so there's a carryover there.
November 5th, I believe it is. Or 2nd. It's either the 2nd or the 5th. So their calendar had the year divided in 12 equal 30-day segments with the five...
No. It doesn't work that way. They are 20-day segments. But they had a religious calendar and a secular calendar, and you have to think of the way the calendar works. in like gears turning against each other. And so if you were born on with, okay, it's really, I'm not a math guy and it gets really difficult for me, but let's say you're born on one rabbit. The exact calendrical position of one rabbit that you were born on will not happen again until you have lived a sheaf of years. And in point of fact, this I have turned my full sheaf of years this year. So if you were born on one rabbit in a particular year, that day would not come again exactly for another 52 years. 4 units of 13. Because the calendrical numerical system was based on units of 13,
which would correspond to a lunar cycle.
More or less.
13 full moons.
More or less, but they also had a far far more advanced astronomical system. So they also paid a lot of attention, for instance, to the movement of Venus, whether it was the morning or the evening star. The scientific advancement level of the indigenous peoples of the Americas, especially in regards to astronomy, mathematics, was so far beyond the dirty, unbathed, disease-laden Europeans as to be incomparable.
Aren't the Mayans the people who actually invented the zero, the concept of the zero, in the numerical system?
Yes.
So that was totally beyond the understanding of Westerners, like you said.
You ever tried to do long division with Roman numerals? The Arabic system, they come up with it too.
So there were cultures in both the New World and the Old World that came up with the same numerical system, which terrified Western Europe, so that we had to wage war against them.
Not so much. It's just that those cultures happened to be more advanced, and the European cultures happened to be more gifted with greed.
Right. Okay. So it's more about avarice than bellicosity.
They were just willing to kill anybody that got in the way of their avarice.
Bob, it's been a real pleasure talking. I hope to talk to you again soon. I want to make room for some of your other callers, but thank you so much. I've learned a lot from you.
Oh, I'm so glad you called. It was an absolutely enjoyable conversation, and I hope you will again.
I'll call you from the Appalachia tributary again in the near future.
And who knew that there was a tributary of Appalachia even as far as New Jersey?
You're the one that brought that to my attention when I talked to you 5 years ago.
Right? I'm being facetious, but yeah. All the mountains up and down the East Coast are the Appalachians. They just happen to be differently constituted. Some of them are cursed to have coal under them, and some of them are not.
Well, I don't think there's any gold around here, but thank God, because I live right up the side of one of these mountains. I hear blasting every Wednesday because I know they're extracting gypsum and other building materials out of them, and it's quite frankly makes you very nervous.
You should be, because anytime they use blasting, they're poisoning nearby communities. It's kind of unavoidable. Well, you have yourself a good evening, and we will talk soon, Rich.
All right, take care, Bob.
All right, bye. That's Rich calling from New Jersey. It is 14 minutes before the hour. I want to extend thanks to Ron for jumping in and standing side by side with Gerald. We have $105 only now to go to meet the evening's fundraising goal, $105. And hopefully we'll get out. Maybe somebody will catch up with that. And we've still got a bunch of catching up to do from last week. And remember, for anybody who wants to have a show on me, $150, there's a premium out there, a Hooterville Holler gift basket, courtesy of News Ninja Carol Baker. With all of that talk of the native cultures of pre-Columbian America, maybe a good way just to, now this isn't a Moran Monday story. This is just an interesting story that I had set aside. It is by Roger Hill over at Truthout. My friends up in northern Wisconsin are guardedly celebrating a little bit because Gogebic Taconite, GTAC, that gang of rapacious, that rapacious gang run by an out-of-control hillbilly by the name of Chris Klein, has closed its office in Hurley, Wisconsin, saying, well, you know, that mean old EPA and the job-killing federal government won't let us poison everybody's water, which they were going to do with the world's largest mountaintop removal operation and a combination open pit mine planned to be 22 miles long, a half a mile wide, and 1,400 feet deep. Yum, yum. Right there on the shores of Lake Superior. They're guardedly optimistic that maybe these predators have been defeated. But it seems like wherever you look, native peoples, with what little land is left to them of all of this that was theirs in the first place, they're constantly under assault. This time, by none other than Screams at Clouds, John McCain, Bomber John. Apparently, Bomber John McCain found time in between television appearances to add a rider to page 1,103 of the National Defense Authorization Act. National Defense Authorization Act. You'd think that had something to do with the military. Well, Bomber John snuck in a provision to divest Apache people from the Chiricahua tribe of an area known as Oak Flat, which is, of course, sacred to them. The purpose of divesting the Apache, the Chiricahua Apaches, from Oak Flat was so that Oak Flat could be turned over to a British-based consortium called, and we all know them because they're a bunch of predatory assholes, Rio Tinto. But the Chiricahua Apaches, and by the way, the Chiricahua are the people from whom Geronimo arose. And, of course, his final mortal remains are still being abused by the 1%, largely thanks to a nasty young man of the early 20th century by the name of Prescott Bush, who wrote, who bragged of having grave-robbed Geronimo so as to give Geronimo's skull to the Skull and Bones Society at their old Yale. Well, the descendants of the Chiricahua Apache who rode with Geronimo during the Apache Wars, well, they're engaged in another battle for their very existence. This is in Arizona, down near the San Carlos Apache Reservation. The San Carlos Reservation was, for all intents and purposes, a concentration camp that was built to detain permanently members of the Chiricahua Apache. There are even sniper positions that can still be found where American soldiers would keep firearms, rifles, trained on Chiricahua Apache people and murder them on sight should they attempt to set foot across the boundary of the San Carlos Reservation. Well, women from the Chiricahua Apache tribe have led a march to Oak Flat, determined to preserve it from the blasting and the gouging and the poisoning planned for them by Rio Tinto in the name of Holy Prophet, P-R-O-F-I-T, not P-R-O-P-H-E-T. Resolution Copper is the entity to whom John McCain would like to give the Oak Flat area. They're a wholly owned subsidiary of Rio Tinto. And the Republican Party of Arizona has been trying and trying and trying and trying to steal that land from the Chiricahua Apache, even though as far back as 1955, an executive order by President Dwight Eisenhower put the Oak Flat campground land off limits to future mining activity, period, end of sentence. In San Carlos, there's a water tower. Written in the Apache language is the statement, "Water is life. We have to protect what we have, and we have to protect our water." And, of course, if Rio Tinto and Resolution Copper are allowed to do what they want to do, the aquifer upon which not only the Chiricahua Apache people rely, but upon which white folks living nearby rely, will be destroyed. I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but we are talking, after all, about Arizona, where water is not exactly in rich abundance like it is here in Appalachia, where we poison it anyway. And I thought I'd heard everything in terms of mining, but this beats the hell. What Resolution Copper wants to do, and why the aquifer is so endangered, is they want to do something called block cave mining. And this, and get this, after all these years of hearing me talk about how toxic mountaintop removal is, it turns out that block cave mining is actually more toxic than surface mining for copper, and produces more acid mine drainage. What they do is they set off explosives, huge explosive charges underground, and they make the mountain fall in upon itself. And then they dig in and scrape out all the filth and separate the copper from the ore. And Miami, Arizona, and Globe, Arizona, both get their water from the Chiricahua Apache people. But the white folks there say, "Yeah, but we want jobs!" Yeah, white people. So I think we should probably keep an eye on this story. Rich mentioned the genocides. Between 1872 and 1929, just in case you're curious, thousands of Chiricahua Apaches were transshipped in windowless rail cars. Where have we heard this before? As prisoners of war, all the way from Arizona to Florida, and then from Florida to Oklahoma. Many, many did not survive the trip. One Chiricahua Apache activist said, "We were prisoners of war then. We're still prisoners of war today." I've only scratched the surface of the story. Go read it at Truth Out. The Apache Way, The March to Oak Flat by Roger Hill. Published 4th of March. And just the gentle reminder that they never stop, because they have a disease of the heart that can only be cured by gold. So that's the program this evening. We find ourselves finishing $105 short. Hopefully someone will hear this on the rerun and help out a little bit. We are in dire circumstances. I'm not kidding. This is one of those little existential crises that hits the horn every so often. It happens to have landed at the end of a brutal, brutal February. Any help is great help, whether it be by mail, the horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801, or by going to the PayPal interface under the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks go out to everyone who keeps all of this going. Thanks go out to all of you who listen, who share your time. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACAC, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. And for some reason, the player isn't working. So, no exit music this evening. So with that, I'll simply say thank you and good night. And I'll see you for Titanic Tuesday, I hope. Be well.